Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you so much for that. It is a real pleasure and a privilege to be here this afternoon. I'll start by sort of coming clean, really. I'm sure a lot of you, when you booked your places to come here to the conference, thought, great, we're going to hear the birthplace results. You're not, and I'm so sorry about that. That the results are not available yet for really good reasons. I can promise they will have been published by the end of the year. More than that, I can't say. However, I am going to talk about one particular aspect of the birthplace study this afternoon, the mapping study, a hugely important part of birthplace that is relevant for all of us as midwives, that was led by one of my colleagues at the National Perinatal Epidemiology Unit, Maggie Redshaw. So that's what I'm going to be going through this afternoon. Okay, I'll talk a little bit about the background to birthplace overall, the aims and objectives of the study. There are probably a lot of you know this already, but just as a reminder, there are actually six separate parts to the birthplace study, so I will flag all of those up. But what I'm focusing on is just one of those six studies, the mapping study. Okay, so planned place of birth, contentious issue, no doubt about it. Everybody in this room will have an opinion about place of birth, but they won't all share the same opinion. The more diverse your audience, the more mixed those opinions are going to be. Here's a quote, if it's going to come up, yep, which is from, I don't know whether the... this is a quote that was written actually by Maggie Miles in 1953, where I trained as a midwife in 1984, which is undoubtedly before some of you were born. And when I trained as a midwife, Maggie Miles was, that was the textbook we had. So here was Maggie Miles in the 1950s, one of the very early editions of her book, saying, "There's little doubt that the woman's own home is the ideal place for her confinement." Very dated term now, but what she goes on to say actually seems just as relevant in the 21st century as it was in the mid-1950s. She said, "The ideal home is the ideal place to give birth if there are no obstetrical, medical, or domestic reasons to the contrary." One of the reasons she goes on to say, and I'm sorry, I haven't got the whole quote here, beg your pardon, I'll go back to that one. She goes on to say that one of the reasons that she advocated home birth at that point was because it improved bonding and also because it reduced the risks of cross-infection. And I think it's just a sobering reminder that something that was an issue in the mid-1950s, that probably in the 80s and the 90s we thought we had got sussed, is actually coming back as a very... serious concern. So that was the 1950s. Things changed dramatically. As you know, you'll all be familiar with the Peel Report, published in 1970, which advocated 100% hospital birth. The reason being, as they said, the greater safety of hospital confinement for mother and child justifies this objective. Where was the evidence to back up that claim? Well, there wasn't any. It was based on sort of hunch, feeling, as was the case really in the 1970s. The concept of getting research to back up your claims wasn't a common currency. Another 20 years on, so another generation on, 1993, changing childbirth. Here was a very clear statement, very clear policy statement that came from the Department of Health, so it's absolutely top down, saying women should receive clear, unbiased advice and be able to choose where they would like their baby to be born. And again, some of you in this audience, I'm sure, will, like me, remember really clearly the excitement we felt when Changing Childbirth was published. And we thought, this is the document we've been waiting for. This is the document that's going to change midwifery practice. Of course, it's never quite like that. Moving on again, Maternity Matters, just 4 years ago, in 2007. The government, again, so the government has been very, very clear over the last 20 years in talking about the importance of offering women choice, and that choice extends to offering women choice about where they will have their baby. So Maternity Matters in 2007 said, depending on their circumstances, women and their partners will be able to choose between these options. So they're becoming even more explicit. They're setting out exactly what those options are or should be. So it's not just home or hospital, it's home or a midwifery unit or hospital. So it's actually clarifying what choices should be available to women. However, as we know, there are big gaps in the evidence. And in particular, although quite a lot of research studies have been done, many of them are not that big. And those research studies that have been done have tended, not always, but have tended to look at outcomes for actual place of birth. So they've looked at the outcomes depending on where the woman gave birth. Now, there are problems involved with that, because if you only look at actual place of birth, then in the hospital birth group, you include women who started their labour at home and ended up transferring into hospital for whatever reason. So the hospital birth group is potentially skewed. Similarly, if you only look at actual place of birth in the home birth group, you're going to include women who hadn't planned to give birth at home. So women who have a BBA, potentially women who free birth. And again, you're going to end up with potentially very skewed data. So when the birthplace study was first planned and outlined, one of the very important things about birthplace that it was going to look at outcomes for planned place of birth. Okay. Birthplace was, I'll talk a little bit more about that. Just to talk a little bit about what else has been happening in the media. This was last summer. Some of you might remember this. Headlines that appeared in the media over quite a short period of time. So from The Guardian on the 1st of July, home births are good for mothers, but riskier for babies. The Lancet, home birth, proceed with caution. The Daily Mail, in its usual nicely balanced fashion, home birth trebles risk of baby death. So what was it that generated these media headlines? Again, I'm sure a lot of you remember, it was actually a publication that's referred to as the wax paper. This was a study published in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology, and the lead author was, can't remember his first name actually, Mr. Wax. And it was a systematic review of evidence from different countries, which included the States, it included the UK, it included various European countries. And indeed, the evidence from this systematic review, and we think of systematic reviews as producing the most robust data. One of the outcomes of this systematic review indicated that outcomes for planned home birth, that there was a higher rate of neonatal death in women who had planned a home birth, and that this risk increased. It was 0.09 in the planned hospital birth group and 0.2 in the planned home birth group. So that's where the Daily Mail came up with their statistic of the tripling of risk. What's evident from that is, of course, that the overall risk remains incredibly low. However, of course, that still raises legitimate concerns. It seems to be that women planning birth at home, it's a more risky undertaking. What's all that about? If you look at the paper more thoroughly, it also indicated that actually, although that risk was apparent when you look at neonatal death rates, if you look at perinatal mortality, there was actually no significant difference in home birth and hospital birth groups. Going back to the risks with the home birth group, the risks seem to be around resuscitation, so failure to resuscitate effectively. And what's interesting is, because the study, as I say, it was a systematic review carried out, or including papers in different countries where, of course, practice is very different. It included in the States, it included women who were being attended by lay midwives. And actually, again, when the data in the wax paper is looked at more closely, if you take out all the women who were attended by non-certified midwives, so you only look at outcomes for women who are being attended by qualified midwives, no difference is an outcome. Didn't hit the media headlines. Okay, what all of that shows is that we need better evidence, and that's absolutely what Birthplace has set out to provide, better evidence. I can promise you, I'm not talking about the findings, but I can promise you it's not going to provide all the answers, because no piece of research ever is going to do that, but it will provide more important information for policymakers, healthcare providers, women and their families. It's been a four-year integrated programme of research funded by what's referred to as the SDO, the NIHR Service and Delivery Organisation, and the Department of Health, who've both invested hugely in this research, and Birthplace would have been impossible without that investment. So, you know, huge gratitude to them for realising that this was important research. As I said, there are six component studies, but the overall aim is to compare outcomes of births planned at home, in midwifery units, and in obstetric units. These are the six studies. I'm going to just mention them very briefly. The terms and definitions, the first part was getting an agreement about what we mean about different units, and these are this is the terminology that came out of that consensus around terms and definitions. So when we did the Birthplace study, this is what we mean when we talk about freestanding midwifery units, alongside midwifery units, and obstetric units. This information, you can download all of this from the NPEU website. I won't go through it because I'm just aware of time. The mapping study, which is what I'm talking about today, the overall aim of the mapping study has been to describe the configuration of maternity services in England. And it is important to flag up again that Birthplace is just specific to England because it was funded by the Department of Health. The mapping study was possible because of the collaboration with the Healthcare Commission. And again, I'm sure a lot of you in this room were involved in collecting the HCC data, the Healthcare Commission data, in 2007. What was fantastic from our point of view at the NPEU was that the Healthcare Commission sent this questionnaire around to trusts and said to them, you must return the data. So there was a 100% response rate, which is quite extraordinary. But it made it possible at that point in time, in 2007, to describe the configuration of maternity care in a way that hasn't been possible before or since, actually. So what does this mapping survey show? Sorry, this is a slightly cluttered slide, but I will talk you through it so that hopefully it becomes clear. Just to go back to what I was talking about earlier in terms of the government's commitment to offering choice around place of birth. That's been apparent since Changing Childbirth in 1993 and became even clearer through Maternity Matters, talking about offering women this very explicit choice about where they might have their baby. However, what the mapping study showed in 2007, and things have probably changed a bit since then, so just to point that out, but in 2007, 65.8% of trusts in England only were able to offer women the choice of birth in an obstetric unit or at home. Okay? 13.2% of trusts in England could offer women the choice of birth in an obstetric unit or an alongside unit, or at home. And just 3.3% of trusts, so tiny, tiny minority, could offer women the full range of choices. So choice of birth in an obstetric unit, a freestanding unit, an alongside unit, or at home. Further, 15% of trusts had obstetric units and freestanding units, but not alongside units. And this is where statistics become, make your head hurt sometimes. So there was just one trust, which because of the numbers is 2.6% in this sample, one trust that just has a freestanding unit, which I can explain later if needed. So the purpose of putting up this slide is just to show the disparity, really, between what the government says and is committed to in terms of offering women choice and the reality in terms of what choices are available to women. And as Cathy Warwick was talking about this morning, what we know is that those midwifery-led units, both alongside and freestanding, are a lot of them do feel as though they're under constant threat of closure. As I say, these are the data for 2007. We are pretty confident that the numbers of midwifery-led units has increased since then, but just as some have opened, others have closed. It's a constantly shifting picture. This is a slightly imperfect pictorial representation of the spread of different types of units. So working from the left, the slide on the left, freestanding midwifery units. So as you can see, up in the north of England, there's quite a number of freestanding midwifery units, also clustered around the southwest, around the Bath area. But there are parts of the country where there are no freestanding units at all. Alongside midwifery units, and again, this is for 2007. In 2007, interestingly, there were no alongside midwifery units in the north of England. Now, I do know that has changed. At that point, no alongside midwifery units in the very far southwest of England. And then the obstetric units, you can see the spread there. And then this is just a slightly different way of showing the information that was gained from the mapping study. So this is by SHA, Strategic Health Authority. So working from the top down, you can all look and see how things were in your own SHA in 2007. So I hope that graph makes sense. I'll leave that for a minute so that you can have a better look at it. One thing is, as I say, these are 2007 data. It gives us a very good picture of what maternity service provision was like 4 years ago. What we don't have at the moment in the UK, and I have to say, if there was one thing I could change, this is what I'd like to change, is a better system of data collection for maternity generally in this country. So more organised systems for collecting data about maternity units in trusts and then the outcomes for those maternity units. But that sort of national data collection isn't happening at the moment. Okay, that's that. So what can we draw as a conclusion from the mapping study? What it shows is that 4 years ago, the government was and remains very committed to offering women choice about where they have their baby. Despite that commitment, in reality, as we've seen from the mapping study, very many women have very limited options about where to give birth. We do know that women's options appear to have increased since then. But what we also know is that a system of routine data collection, of collecting that data nationally, and actually I would like it to extend to all four countries within the UK, would enable us to monitor changes far more effectively. So those are the conclusions from the mapping study. These are the people who were involved in the birthplace team. Every single one of them had a very important contribution to the birthplace study. And just finally, thanks again to the Department of Health and the SDO who funded birthplace. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.